Hey everyone, if you're interested in becoming a therapist or learning about the process to become one, please stay tuned. Hi, I'm Kiki.
And I'm Kemi.
And you're listening to
Your Advisors Will See You Now, a podcast that will help you to figure out all of your options for life after high school.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Your Advisors Will See You Now. Hopefully everyone's enjoyed it. We've been getting a lot of good careers lately. We say it at the end, but I'm going to say it at the beginning. If there are ones that you are interested in hearing or occupations, careers you want to hear about, please send us an email, send us a message on Instagram. We'd love to hear what you all are looking forward to. But today, Kemi and I are joined by Manuela Buma. I call her Manny, but I'm going to be professional today. Manuela Buma. She's a therapist, and we're going to learn more about Manuela's career. But I'm going to read her bio, and then we're going to get into the episode. Manuela Buma is a compassionate and dedicated professional in the field of mental health, striving to contribute to the well-being and personal growth of individuals seeking therapeutic support. She is the founder and director of Rooted Therapeutic Center, LLC, and serves as a therapist for Montgomery County Health and Human Services. Manuela's expertise lies in providing comprehensive and client-centered counseling services to individuals across diverse backgrounds. Her approach is centered around creating a safe and non-judgmental space where clients can explore their emotions, challenges, and aspirations. She believes in the power of collaboration and actively involves her clients in the therapeutic process, fostering a strong therapeutic alliance based on trust and respect. Through her expertise, genuine care, and dedication, she continues to make a positive impact in the lives of her clients and the community as a whole. Welcome, Manuela, to the podcast. Thanks for being here.
That's a good bio.
That's a really good bio. I know, right? I was like,
look, shout out to the bot.
No, that is really good. So Thank you for being here with us. We appreciate you.
Thank you guys for having me. It's an honor to be on your platform. I like what you guys are doing. If I had this when I was in high school, I don't think I would have gone to college.
I think that's our thing too. You know, maybe we would have did it a little bit differently, but I'll also say, so Manuela went to Elon with us too. So this is another Elon alum. You know, if we didn't go to college, we wouldn't know all of each other, but you know, maybe we would have met each other along the way somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know how God works, anywho. But yeah, just to get started, can you talk a little bit about your background, like educational background, and how you got into the field of mental health counseling?
Yes. So I, like everyone, I went to regular grade school and all of that. And upon leaving high school, I went to Elon University. When I entered Elon University, my major at the time was education. I was really intrigued about being a teacher. And then I took a like education and policy course. And I did not like what they were talking about at all. So I switched. I was really interested in high school. I was really interested in psychology. Switched over to a psychology major, graduated from Elon with a psychology degree. After Elon, I transitioned to Trinity Washington University with a clinical mental health counseling degree. Did that for about 3.5-4 years. At the moment, fortunately, I'm pursuing, I gotta be honest, y'all. I'm pursuing a doctoral degree, starting my dissertation process, but none of that matters at right now when it comes to my occupation. So schools, yes, but then after, you know, for clinical mental health, you have to do a lot of hours of just training and all of that. So I spent the majority of my time post master's training, getting licensed, etc. So yeah,
that's cool. Mm-hmm. So I guess tagging back to, because I want to go into the doctorate, but I guess we'll stay on track with the master's degree first in the hours and the licensure. Mm-hmm. So when you decided to pick your master's program, are there different programs out there for different types of like therapy? Can you list some of the different types of therapy?
Yes. So there, overall, you can focus on a few different things, right? So at the time, I could have chosen between school counseling, and just the overall clinical mental health, right? But then there are other programs where you can go into forensic psychology and much more. Mm-hmm. Mainly, there's also social work, right? Where you can pursue a social work degree. And after the social work degree, you sit for a clinical exam, right? And then you become a licensed clinical social worker, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the three main pathways people usually take, whether they become a school counselor, they have an overall clinical mental health degree, or they go into social work and then go take the clinical route. Now, for like forensic psychology and things like that, there are programs that have that, but you're not necessarily doing face-to-face clinical interactions with clients. It's mainly more so like you're helping the police department, right? Or you're working, some people work strictly with assessing clients. So whether it's like, if you're under school, you're assessing for IEP and 504 plans, or someone wants to get their kid evaluated, you can go down that route as well.
That's pretty good. I remember I used to have a major in psychology, and I was like, yeah, I think I want to do forensics.
You did.
I know I did. And then I took one forensic psychology class, and I was like, well, I'm too deep in the major now, but I know I'm not doing this. This was so dark.
Psychology is different. It's different.
Woof. We read this one book, and it was just like, it's like, read this chapter. It was just tale on tale of trauma. And I don't know what I was thinking. I was like, what I think forensic psychology was going to be in the first place? I don't know.
It's literally trauma after trauma, but it takes, I mean, honestly, I know a few individuals who are in that field, and I don't know how, but they, you know, they talk about it like it's the most rewarding thing that they've ever done. But I mean, I feel like in forensic psych, you're able to see firsthand, like the turnaround of like knowing that you're doing good or doing good work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, I'm not mad at it. I'll never do it.
You mentioned the hours that have to go into like becoming licensed. We have my other friend on here. Well, she was on the podcast earlier this week, but she's a speech language pathologist and talked about like the same thing. So I'm going to make the point that if you're going into like a clinical field, it involves a lot of hours. But can you talk about a little bit about like your master's program and then like the first like part of the master's program and then getting into the hours and then like preparing for the licensure?
Yes. So, you know, if you think about this master's program, what I would say is different is in undergrad, you're doing a lot, right? You are learning about all the things. And then finally, in those last 2 years, you're probably honed in on what your focus is at the time, right? So you do all your general ed classes. Now, moving on to a master's degree, imagine it just being strictly focused on the things that you are actually interested in. Mm-hmm. So the first few years of my master's degree were, you know, learning about the theories, like all of the founding fathers of psychology, everything that they had to say, even though it was very, let me not say that because, yeah. All of the founding fathers, you learn about different techniques, assessing how do I diagnose, what is a diagnosis, what are the different disorders, what do they look like. You're learning all of this information, you're also doing research, qualitative, quantitative, you're just gaining a lot of information. Mm-hmm. So those I would say are like your first three years of a master's program. Now, transitioning into the next portion of it is what we will call a practicum and internship portion. The practicum and internship portion, depending on your university, they help you find a location for you to now take the book knowledge and transfer it into people, which is terrifying. I'm not going to sit here and cap. Like, it's absolutely terrifying because I am so full of all of this book knowledge and y'all want me to go talk. What are you talking about? How does this work? So you find a practicum site, and depending on the program, you can either stay at that practicum site throughout your three semesters of practicum and internship, or if you want to get like a different feel, you can go from one site to another site, given that they're all, you know, you're working towards those hours, right?
Right.
So there are hours that you need to graduate, and then there are hours that you need to have a license. Mm-hmm. Okay. So at the time, my program, I needed 700 hours to graduate. And that's broken down into like direct hours, so face-to-face, indirect hours, paperwork, training, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. So 700 hours, I think the majority of those hours had to be direct. So you find your location, you're working, you're grinding, you're getting at those hours, you are chugging away, and then you move into internship, where depending on the location, honestly, I had a blessing in finding my internship site. It was literally God ordained. Like it was very, very far away.
Mm-hmm.
I guess God wanted me to drive. so, but either way, like it was a blessing. As soon as I think my first week, you do a little training. Okay, here are the logistical things. Here's what you need to do. Here's how you input the notes. Boom, boom, boom. You can shadow me this week. And then next week, go through our clinical, like our wait list, and start calling people.
Wow.
Scheduling them for sessions. This is like week two of practicum. I'm looking at this like, excuse me? I think I need to shadow you a little bit more. But she was like, no, you know, you got this, you have the knowledge, like we wouldn't have hired you. I mean, mind you, you do interview. And they get to reject you, right? They get to tell you that you're not a good fit, or I think for me, it was between two, the one that I loved and the one similar to the one that I loved, but it was just in a different location, right? But so let's say I live in Maryland. So I had one location was in College Park and the other location was in District Heights, which is from my house. One of it is like a 30-minute drive, and the other one is like a 45 to 50-minute drive.
Mm-hmm.
The College Park was great, phenomenal. I loved it. The lady, we were like sisters at that point. Like by the end of the interview, that's the homie. But she was like, unfortunately, we can't accept you because we have doctoral students who need to get their hours and they take precedence.
Gotcha.
She was like, okay, well, we can't. But that site and my District Heights site are basically sister sites.
Okay.
So I was able to go and interview at District Heights, met the most phenomenal person in the world. She was like, yeah, you know, I didn't really need to interview you. We just, I know, right? That was easy. So, you know, I'm working, I am chugging away at my hours, but yeah, you hit the ground running there, hopefully, depending on your site, because some sites I can't really speak for. But you hit the ground running, you're training, you're learning. The positive thing was that at my site, all of my trainings were paid for. Like I got flued out to I went to, you know, going to Chicago for trainings. My supervisor at the time would ask, what are the things that I'm interested in so I could hone in on those skills, et cetera. All of this happens. I'm chugging away at my hours. I reach my 400 plus. I stayed at the same site for both practicum, internship one and internship two. Some people switch between each semester, but I stayed there. It was great. I graduated and they were like, you can stay on. And I was like, stop. That's so nice. and then, you know, at the time of when I was graduating, we were allowed to continue practicing without a license under supervision, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you graduate, but you still have to study for your exam.
Right.
For me, it was the Maryland licensure exam and a law test. So I graduate. I continue to work part-time with them. And at the time, now things are different. I was able to continue practicing while studying for my exam. I took my exam, and praise God, I passed it. And then I just continued. Like, I was now an LGPC, licensed graduate professional counselor. Currently, though, students are not allowed to do that.
No.
Well, it's very strict. I'll just say in Maryland, because I can't speak for all states. In Maryland, you graduate, you stop practicing, you take your test. Once you pass your test, you go ahead and continue to practice. So that's how that happened. You get your license and you still have to do hours. You still have to do clinical hours because at the time, you are a licensed graduate professional counselor, and all G's need some level of supervision, right? So in order for me to get my full license now, LCPC, licensed clinical professional counselor, I'll have to do 3,000 hours.
Sounds like a lot.
Doesn't it?
It sounds like years and years.
Who came up with that number?
Yeah.
So wait, that's an additional 3,000? You can't even...
I can take my 700.
Yeah.
And add it to the 3.
But it's still big, but...
It's still a lot.
What is that? 2,300 left?
It sure is.
Yeah, so you still do the additional 3,000 hours of work. So where I was working... So it was my supervisor, and then there was, at the time, it was like three, like, it was just three of us, right? So the main supervisor, and then another therapist on site, and then myself as, like, the full-time people working, which was great because sitting under my supervisor and the other clinician on site, she was like, all right, look, here is my Excel sheet that I use to track all of my hours. Use this, keep it updated so that when it's time to... send in your application for full licensure, you don't have to like try to figure out where the hours are. What did you do? They were intentional about communicating that I could probably even apply early for my full license. So I was very well like encapsulated and trained, and like they were like pushing me along. Mm-hmm. Yes, 3,000 hours. Once that's completed, you get to apply for your full license. And it's usually a seamless process because they already have your information from your previous application for LG. And then you continue to practice. If you want to stay in that location, if you want to stay under supervision, you can. But you just continue. Now, after that, the only thing that you have to do to maintain your standing as a clinical professional is continued education, so trainings, mm-hmm. and then paying for your renewal of your licensure.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, with all those hours, I'm like, can you, what is it, reciprocity for different states?
Ooh, good question. Yes, some states.
Okay.
Okay, I'm about to sound like a little nerd, but yes, there are some states. So, for example, I just finished my application for reciprocity in DC, and I'm officially licensed in DC. Easy peasy. They wanted way too much paperwork, but that's okay. Like, it's cool. Now, I live in the DMV area. Maryland and DC, reciprocity. Maryland and Virginia, no.
Hmm.
Which means for me to be a DMV therapist, right, for all the letters in that, you know, little situation, I would have to go sit for a test in Virginia, right? The test that I took in 2018. Similar, quote unquote.
Yeah, yeah.
I gotta go sit for a test. And not only that, also a law test. Now, Virginia's pretty difficult in that if they don't agree with some of like your courses that are on your application, they might say you need to go take this at one of our Virginia schools.
Mm. Wow.
You know, nobody, I'm not getting licensed in Virginia. Okay.
Yeah.
People can have that. Like, but yes, so some states do have reciprocity, other states do not. Okay. Currently, the ACA, the American Counseling Association, is working on this thing called Counselor Compact, Compass, excuse me, where during the pandemic, everything was online.
Right.
And people were moving. Or you moved abroad, right?
Like, I'm out.
America, good luck, really, right? And because of that, one of the main rules is that you have to practice where your client lives.
Okay.
You have to hold a license where my client lives. I could be in Jamaica, right? Mm-hmm. Living and breathing in Jamaica. My client lives in Maryland. I will log on to the call to, you know, to meet my client because I'm licensed in Virginia. Now, when my client moves, I can't see them, right?
Yeah.
So the counselor compass or compact, those words are kind of beating me up right now. But that law, or it's kind of like in the works, right, is where to make it easier for clinicians to practice across state lines. So there are a bunch of states that have, is that me? there are a bunch of states that have signed on to the Council Compact, and there are others that have not, right? Mm-hmm. So that would make it a lot easier for someone to say, oh, well, no, I have a reason to practice in California because mm-hmm. my client, whom I've seen for however long, moved to California, and that's the only person I'm going to see there.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are kind of, a lot of clinicians are really happy about it because, like, it doesn't seem ethical to mm-hmm. end a therapeutic relationship because I've had a client to Texas, and it's like, all right, I'll talk to you. Okay.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, well, I guess, you know, not that the work stops there, but the hope is that they're able to find a clinician that fits their needs.
Right. Exactly.
It's not always guaranteed. So things are in the works, but reciprocity does happen. You just have to look, know which states you want to practice in. If they have reciprocity, apply for it. And then you should be good to go.
Mm-hmm.
That makes so much sense that they're finally doing that now. Cause I can't even imagine when you finally find like your perfect fit with someone in therapy, and then you have to move for whatever reason. They have to start mm-hmm. all over again and then try to find the right kind of connection. Or you might have all this other paperwork that and all this, your person knows who you are at this point mm-hmm. and knows how to help you. So that's so frustrating. But now it looks like they're getting that underway. So that's good.
Slowly but surely. You know, it's funny because, I mean, y'all could delete this part if you want to, but
not keeping it in.
I have a client who's like, if I move, I'm not telling nobody. I'm like,
okay.
What do you mean? Well, I won't tell you. I'll just decorate my house the same. And you come my house.
And same background.
Background, same everything. So the thing with, so there's that. So I think in addition to all of this is understanding that not only is that the ethical standard, but insurance companies, if you take insurance as a clinician, uh-huh. insurance companies are kind of make that, like, keep you honest.
Yeah.
Right. So my client can move to Cali, but her insurance is going to change. Her address is going to change on her insurance. Uh-huh, right.
Right.
And she can be like, oh, I am. I'm in Maryland. But like, you're uh-huh. not. And your insurance company knows that.
Yeah.
So that also impacts the payment that the clinician receives. But you want to make sure that you have integrity initially. Right. So I think that's the main thing, because this profession can be a silo where you're kind of working, you're grinding, you know, depending on if you don't have a supervisor or a community. You can often find yourself working at it alone, which, you know, who's going to hold you accountable? How are you holding yourself accountable?
Mm-hmm.
If I move to Texas and I still see them, that's a clear violation. Like, I can't do that, you know?
Yeah.
So if the insurance companies, if they're paying out of pocket, like full self-pay, full, you know, the full price, no one's really going to know, quote unquote. But you want to make sure that you're maintaining some level of integrity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So go ahead, Cam.
No, go ahead, Gigi.
So I'm sure it varies every day, but can you just give us like a general, what your day-to-day looks like as a therapist?
Okay, sure. So I have two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I own my own private practice, and I work for my county as a clinician for my county, which means one of these things is a 9-to-5, and the other one is a whenever. Right. So my current day to day, and I'll just speak about myself. One, I get up, you know, I do like a little 5:30, 5 a.m. work, you know, wake up, work out, do my thing, whatever, quiet time, cute. And usually on days where I'm going late into the county job, late would be like at 11:30. I usually see about two personal private practice clients in the morning. Right. So let's say I'll have like a 9 a.m. and a 10 a.m. Finish at around 11 with private practice, head over to the county. I usually, on those days where I'm going in late, I usually work there until 8. So it's like a full, what's that, 8 hours?
Yeah.
You know, with my time, you know, if you're working under an agency or under a county government or whatever the case may be, they're pretty rigid, I would say, as in determining and figuring out how many clients you're seeing, because the county job, is basically for low-income families and et cetera. Mm-hmm. Our wait list is really long. So my Tuesdays and Wednesdays are like, you know, the two private practice and then county job. On Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays, sometimes Saturdays, I usually see my clients in the evening because I usually end my county job at like 5, and then I'll see like a 5 and a 6 or like a 5, 6, 7. And then Saturdays, I usually, off and on, I would see like 2 or 3 clients in the morning starting at 8 o'clock. I want to be done by 11. And I spend that last hour completing clinical notes, doing client billing, and just like any logistical thing, right, that I need to do. At the moment, too, I supervise like 2 or 3 other clinicians, one of which is under my private practice. The other one works where I used to work. So those are also like sprinkled in there throughout the week. And yeah, I think I would say it's pretty hectic. I'm not going to lie to you, right? But if I remove the county job, it's a dream. You know what I mean? Where mm-hmm. it's just like, mm-hmm. I can wake up in the morning, see a 9 or 10, go down the street, get a little coffee, walk around mm-hmm. the lake, come back, chill. If I want to add a 2, I can add a 2. If you work for yourself, your schedule can be as flexible as you want it to be.
Yeah.
You can pack in as many clients as you want. You can tell yourself, I only want to see a maximum 3 clients a day. Whereas when you work under an agency, you're there for 8 hours, you know, because I think I have a hybrid schedule. So Monday I'm at home, Thursday, Friday I'm at home. Those 2 days where I'm in the office, I want to make sure that I'm seeing all the people who I would like label as like high risk, high yeah. need for in person. So I'm laying eyes on them every week. And sometimes that means I am back to back from like 2 until 8. Mm. You know, like, thank you, God. See you later. Okay, next one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it all depends. I think everything looks different just depending on where you are, the population that you're serving, the time that you have, honestly, you know. But yeah, my day-to-day is pretty hectic. Mm-hmm.
I like it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you need a different licensure to do private practice as well?
No. You maintain the same license. You can get an LLC. You have what we call a national provider identification number, an NPI number. I made sure to get one for my practice because I know that I wanted my practice to grow and for anything to be under the practice, not under myself. Some people just work under themselves, so it'd be like, oh, Emmanuel Abuma therapy. Like, mm-hmm. Cool, cute. Other people kind of do, like, you know, the whole shebang. No, you don't need another license. I have I'm an approved clinical supervisor in the state of Maryland. I didn't have to do that to have my own practice. I could have just kept going. Once you finish those 3,000, the world is your oyster. Once that's
right.
is done and it's behind you, you determine what you want your clinical world to look like.
Mm-hmm.
So private practice was always something that I wanted to do, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, bet. How am I going to do this? You create the plan and you move. But yeah, you don't need anything extra. You do need to make sure that you keep up with your taxes. You do need to make sure that you have to keep your books are clear, you know, that you're paying yourself. If you have other employees or contractors, you make sure that you're paying them on time. You just need to make sure that logistically the government can come and chase you down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, so I think you said you're getting your doctorate degree?
Yes.
So what made you do that and what can you do differently when you obtain a doctorate?
It was a promise that I told myself when I was in, what is that? High school, I always wanted to get a doctoral degree. Mm-hmm. What can you do with a doctoral degree once you complete and you're done and you are in private practice or you are working for an agency? It depends on what exactly it is that you personally want to do, right? Mm-hmm. I have a goal of, this is going to sound so cheesy, delete this
doctor.
No, keeping it in, keeping everything in.
Okay. One of my main goals, because of the kind of training I received and how monumentous and life-changing it was, right? Like, I can't say that I would be the clinician that I am today had I not trained under the people that I trained under. Which, to me, like, I've had interns and all of that, and like, I know what it's like to receive good training in order to become a good clinician. You know what I mean? Because I think, this is a little rant, I think at times people go into this work, this is like, you're serving, like, this work is literal service.
Mm-hmm.
And people go into the work in a way that is very pompous. Like, you know, like, I know what I'm doing. I'm the best. I read the books. No, did you? But like, are you able to meet a client where they are?
Mm.
I'll tell you guys a little side note here. So we get on Instagram, and we, as in the world, and there are people that you follow on Instagram that are like, oh my gosh, like, wow. Like, before I had my private practice, I was following like two or three Black women in like the DMV area that were clinicians and that had their own private practice. And I was just like, man, goals, bro. Like, I can't wait for that to be me. You know, this is me like grinding and doing all the things. So I remember I had someone submit a form for a consultation call for my private practice. And I'm like, sure, you know, you schedule the consult call. And I usually ask a few questions like, well, have you gone to therapy before? What was that, you know, experience like for you, et cetera? So this person says, yes, I did. And the person names a clinician that I follow on social
media.
And then after the name, I mean, dragged her. Dragged her down and was like, she was awful. Like, I have never felt so small. I would leave her office worse than when I even came in. I should have just not started therapy at all. You know what I mean? To which me, you know, who has looked up, quote unquote, to this person on social, right. I'm like, now I'm on the phone, but I'm also on my phone, like going on. I'm going on there like, let me quickly do a few Googles. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I go on Google and I type in the person's name. Like, I have never done this. I just see you on socials and I keep it pushing. My eyes get too tired. I'm not going to look for you. That is not that deep. Mm-hmm. But I went on Google and I typed in her name or her practice name. Why did this lady have like all 1-star reviews?
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I was shocked and all. Like, so in one of those moments, not to get a little preachy in here, but it was God just reminding, like, hey, you don't make idols out of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, like, I see this. This is a person I was following since I was in my master's program.
Yeah.
You know, they get on there, featured on BuzzFeed, featured on Huffington Post, feature, but your reviews, honey.
Don't say the same. Yeah.
Exactly. So because of that, I value training so much. Like, I value supervision so much. And one of my goals is to have, like, I want my private practice to grow into like a training facility, not necessarily like a sweatshop, but like,
no one was thinking that.
Not at all. I did not think that.
You know, you got to put some disclaimers out there. But like a training facility for people to be nurtured.
Yeah.
And cared for, because the therapist, although they hold space for people have to hold space for them. You have to be able to like be trained in a way that caters to your strengths. Like, had my supervisor never done that, I don't even know what it would look like. Mm-hmm. You know, had someone not believed in me, or has someone not poured into me, I'm not really sure. Therapy would have just been like a one-off, like, okay, come on in. Okay, today we're going to do CBT. What are you thinking about? Okay, what do you do when you think that? Okay, let's change your thoughts. Okay, completely dismissing story, history, the pain, the space. So, you know, that's why I want to get a doctoral degree. One, because y'all gonna call me Dr. Boomer, first of all. Second, yes. You know, I want to be able to create curriculum. I want to be able to like establish, like even like knowing what I want to write my dissertation about. I want it. It matters. All of that matters, right? But some people want to go into teaching, you know, helping, you know, that master, those master level students pursue their degree and kind of meet them where they are. Other people are strictly about research, 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 research. They want to just go into the world and research. So it all depends, honestly. I don't have to get a doctoral degree. Like I do care, but like I don't have to, right? Yeah. But I want to. A lot of the people in my cohort are like, you know, everything is different for everyone. So my desire and what I want to do, there's some people who are like, no, I need to be in the world of academia. Like I want to only do research, you know? And to also be completely transparent and honest, as a Black woman, certain spaces don't necessarily hold you up or support you without that degree. Mm-hmm. Right? Because if we think about it, there's been an influx, a rise in people needing mental health services. And a lot of students get into the field because, you know, you've seen therapy all over YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, whatever. And you're like, oh, I could do that. I could sit and talk to somebody. So there's been an influx or rise in people wanting to seek, you know, wanting to go down that route. Right. Which, you know, like the one star lady, it muddies the waters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So you want to be able to, like, for me to hold space here, I need to be respected here. Right. Mm-hmm. And in some rooms, that PhD, PsyD, all of that, that matters. Right. And unfortunately, that's the world that we live in. We can't sit here and act like it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So I don't have to get it. I promised myself in high school that I would. I'm keeping a promise to my younger self. But overall, just for my own personal goals, I know that it matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know that certain doors will open that probably wouldn't have opened. Who knows? Maybe God would have done. But like, maybe would have not have opened had I just stayed with my master's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. That's really touching as well.
Yeah.
But just to hear that, I think like our whole thing too is like, okay, I go into this major and it's like, what do I do with this? Like, what do I do with my life? Mm-hmm. But you have like a purpose. Like you have like a real, like, I'm not saying people don't have purposes, but like a intention, but like you have a real, like it's very intentional what your,
it's very evident
your goal is. Yeah, it's very evident. Like it was like, you know, you've watched other people, you've learned from other people too. Like you learned from people that you admired that weren't what you thought they were or people thought they were. I think that like you just took a lot of your experiences and like put it into what your future is. That's very inspiring.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. Proud of you, Manny.
I'm sorry, more question. Manuela.
Of course. Yes, please. Only Manuela. Nobody knows me as Manny.
How do you help yourself to unpack from all those experiences that you've had during the day? Because that was too late in the game when I figured this out. When I was like, I can't do therapy. I can't be a therapist. Because I'm a very I take a lot of things home with me. Mm-hmm. So how are you able to do that as a therapist after you've been helping, you're pouring out all day? How are you able to kind of, you know, distance yourself from that when you clock off and relax?
Good question. When I was in my master's program, one of my professors, I think he's passed on since, was like, you know, they don't pay you to think about them on the weekends. Wait a minute. Not you telling the truth.
Write that down because I need that.
Shoot, I'm just for my job too. Shoot.
They don't pay you at all. Now, this is not about money. Mm-hmm. It's just about perspective, right? In the sense that you have to realize that your mind is real estate.
Yeah.
And the way these developers are buying up land and building on land and all of that, it is worth your while to make sure that your real estate, your space up here isn't clouded with stories and people stuff.
Yeah.
On days when you're not even seeing people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I would say that it in the beginning, it was very difficult. You know, fresh out, not even fresh out, still in school, thrown into the lion's den, like, see the kids. And I'm like, no. And you're hearing devastating stories. I remember sitting one of my clients when I had first started, sitting in front of them and them telling me, like, oh, mom brings them in, but the issue is not the kid, the issue is the mom. But what is the issue with the mom? Mom is in a very abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where the kid shows me bald spots on her scalp, right? That the father has ripped out her hair. Now, I am a little bit rah-rah. Rah-rah meaning trained to go, if you feel me. So who do we need to fight? But who do I need to call?
Right.
But even in those moments, again, under great leadership, you learn so much. But like, my supervisor was like, did you report it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you right now. She goes, did you call CPS? I'm like, I'm about to. Okay, I need you to calm down.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And you kind of have to zoom out and say, my reaction in this moment isn't serving this client.
Right.
I'm reacting because they're telling me this secondhand, but she's experiencing it. Yeah. And there she is sitting in front of me, calmly telling me about the abuse that she's endured. Right. At the time I told you guys where I was working was like 45, 50 minutes away from home. So I have the entire ride home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the process.
Either process, ruminate, or de-stress. Like, something has to happen. During that time, I learned a lot about just, man, for me to honor myself, I have to honor my client. Which means that after we talk today, I can't go take this moment and now take it and transfer into the next thing that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't honor the next thing,
mm-hmm.
right? And if the next thing is me and my free time, I need to be able to honor that. A lot of times, I've come cases after cases where you're just like, oh, I wish I could adopt you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or moments where I'm talking to adults who've endured the absolute worst. Man, I wish I was there with you when this incident happened when you were 12, but now you're 45 and like, you gotta do that. It's understanding that one, it's their story, not my story.
Yeah.
No, I can't do anything. I can't change anything. I'm not God. I'm not sovereign. You know what I'm saying? My ego cannot get too big. My ego cannot get too loud that it makes me feel as though I'm now savior for all things and all people. Because the moment that I think that way, then I'm now creating spaces. And now there's the real estate up here. It's all about how I'm going to save Bob. Yeah. And you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely say, like, hold space for yourself. For me to be the clinician that I am, I have to be mindful of my own personal needs.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't do that, I cannot work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For me to be able to hear, see, attend, understand, I need to be able to be completely and totally in tune with myself and present with the client.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So back to that professor, they don't pay you to think about them on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
They might be thinking about you, but you can't be thinking about them. I have some clients like, I might be your best client. Sure.
In this moment.
you are the one for the 10 o'clock. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But to them, I'm like, I mean, I honor your time. I honor your space. I honor this is for you. And at the end of the day, you know, again, not to be super like saved and all that, man, God is sovereign.
Mm.
And I have to trust in his plan for people. I have to trust in his plan for the world, which means that everyone in it, right? So if someone is calling or emailing completely dysregulated, and their session, and today's Saturday and their session is on Thursday. I need to figure out, do I want to bring that up on my Monday? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would it, knowing what I have to do on Monday, is it feasible?
Right.
I do battle with like, oh my gosh, but what is going to happen? And da 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 da. I'm human. Like, I'm not cold hearted, right? I'm like, ugh. Like, for example, I have a client who recently, actually, like a few days ago, I had to cancel their session the Friday before Mother's Day. And this is a client who probably has, you know, someone would call mother, you know, mother problem. Mm-hmm. And the client came on the call and was like, how dare you cancel my client knowing that it's the date, like the weekend of Mother's Day. Mm. Like, oh shoot. Oops. You know? Look at you. You made it. You made it the weekend and the days after.
Right.
How to be. You know what I mean? So you do encounter that, but overall, my reminder that God is sovereign, my reminder that, man, all things work together for the good. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? And they're not paying me
on the weekend.
Yeah. You know, so all of that intertwined. But you also have to have tough skin. I'm not gonna lie to you. You kind of have to be able to be like very like I compartmentalize very well. Everything That's has its good. Time. Everything has its space. When I'm with family, I'm with family. When I'm by myself, I'm by myself. When I'm doing school, I'm doing school. But like everything has its time. So yeah.
That's good.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
You have any other questions, Kiki?
No, I think that was a good way to wrap it up.
That was. Okay. Shoot, I feel like that was just a TED Talk for everybody out here.
Yeah.
It's like, real. I could use that for myself. But before we transition out, do you want to shout out your platform, your individual practice?
Sure. Okay, let me stop. I own, of course, a practice called Rooted Therapeutic Center. I really like it. I think it's pretty dope. I'm currently not taking any new clients, but I do have a clinician on staff who is. I don't know the Instagram by her, so I'm about to pull it up. Don't, please. This is really bad. I'm really bad at that. Okay.
No, it's okay.
So it's Rooted, rooted.tc. on Instagram, or our website is rootedtc.com. I mean, that's about it. I'm not doing much. I'm chilling. I'm real low-key. So if you're in the Maryland area and you are in need of services, we have a clinician on staff. We might hire another one soon, hopefully. Who is open and has the availability. I, at the moment, am not taking any clients. When I do, it will be announced. But at the moment, mm-hmm. But yeah.
This is great. Thank you for letting us interview, thank you, Manny.
Manuela.
Thank you, guys.
Manuela. I'm the whole time.
Manuela. Full name, okay?
Manuela, thank you for letting us interview on this podcast. I think it's going to be very, very informational for students that are interested in clinical therapy, or they just kind of want an idea of where to go, how long that process takes, and, like, you know, how many of those clips, those 3,000 hours. So it's really good for them to get this, you know, while they're in high school, while they're trying to figure things out. And I think this will be very, very helpful. So thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into this episode. Please make sure to follow all of our other social media platforms, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, whatever there is, we have it. Make sure to send us emails as well for other requests for different careers that you'd like to hear about. But until then, we will see you in the next one.
See you.
Bye. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening to the latest episode of Your Advisors Will See You Now. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media pages and check out our website. Take a look at the show notes below.
And please make sure to subscribe and share this podcast. Also, show us some love and please leave a 5-star review. Catch you next time.
See ya.